My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius.
I am Iron Man. Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Post Credit Podcast. I am your host, Eric Italiano, senior writer at BroBevel.com. Today, as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Kate Onder, who you could find writing about video games over at comicbook.com. We also have our dear, dear friend, Brandon Katz, who you could find analyzing analytics over at Parrot Analytics. Fellas, it's been some time. It's officially summer, kind of. Memorial Day weekend is around the corner. It's been some time since we've been on the mics. The last time we talked to y'all was for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, which largely has not quite fixed, but rerouted the MCU. Today, we are going to be talking about Barry. We're going to be talking about Succession. But first, Kate is the only one of the three of us who has seen Fast X. The $300 million Fast X, might I add. Now, B, what do your number crunching say about a $300 million film? Is that a good bet?
I mean, listen, it's an open secret based on how much profit participation for the talent at this point in a 20-year franchise that Universal, it's not really a huge money maker for them. Yes, it obviously resonates.
You mean Fast is not?
The Fast movies are really not huge money makers. They've been dipping domestically for several films. You keep a smaller percentage of overseas box office than you do domestic. And like I said, like they have to split so much money with the creative talent that at this point, it's really just kind of a brand lift as opposed to a straight profit maker.
Kate?
The movie itself, I will say post Paul Walker's death is probably the best one they've made. I think there's like a pretty like clear drop off in quality since he passed away. I don't know if there's any direct connection with that, but it's a fun movie. It's very self-aware. It kind of goes a little too far at the very end. The last like 5 minutes of this movie is the stupidest shit I've ever seen. Like even for this franchise, it's ridiculous. I've seen the movie twice now, by the way. Don't ask why.
Wait, B, do you care about this film at all?
No, not in the slightest.
Okay, major spoiler warning. Kate is about to tell me and B what he's talking about. I'm super curious. So if you have not seen Fast X and care about the ending, skip ahead. Kate, how long do you think it will take you to talk about it?
A minute and a half at most.
Minute? Probably. All right, skip ahead 2 minutes from now. All right, spoiler warning for Fast X. Kate, go. Hey, y'all, it's Eric with just a quick production note. Our conversation about Fast X lasted a little longer than we thought it would, so if you want to skip that and not hear any spoilers, skip ahead to around the 6 minute mark. Again, skip ahead to the 6 minute mark if you want to avoid spoilers for Fast X.
So at the end of Fast X, the whole movie is Jason Momoa. He's very upset because Vin Diesel and The Rock killed his dad.
He's very upset.
Nice. So he's like, I'm going to make Vin Diesel suffer the whole movie. He's doing the whole Ethan Hunt thing where he's like, you can't save everyone, but like family is your weakness. Like they really lean into like family is his weakness. The whole meme.
I've seen people. So now you've compared this to the MI films. I've seen it compared to The Dark Knight and Avengers Infinity War.
In some ways. Yeah. So that's the whole like premise. And at the end of the movie, the Jason Momoa captures Vin Diesel's son. Vin Diesel gets him back. John Cena, Vin Diesel's brother, dies trying to protect both of them, which is crazy in and of itself. And
even though he's been a villain for like 20 years within the Fast and Furious timeline.
In the timeline.
Dom's brother, just to make sure that we're all clear on that.
So now, at the end of the movie, Vin Diesel is in his Dodge Charger or whatever with his son, and they're on top of a dam, and there are two semi trucks rigged to blow, and Jason Momoa is driving them at Vin Diesel. Vin Diesel drives his car off the dam while it's exploding. The car is engulfed in flames, and he hits the nitrous boost on his car and like zooms out of the flames, like in the most ridiculous looking way I've ever seen. It's just absurd. And they get to the bottom of the dam. They're okay. The car's destroyed. Vin Diesel hugs his son, and Jason Momoa is like, all right, now you can die. And he detonates the dam. Cut to black. We are now in Antarctica, which goes back to somewhere else in the Vin Diesel's wife is in
ready
in Bria. She's in prison the whole movie.
North Pole, yeah. Gritty Santa, and now it's a crossover with whatever the fuck that Santa movie that just came
Violent
out was
Night, Ad or Santa, or whatever. Yeah.
Wait. Is she in prison in Antarctica?
Yes. She's in a black site prison with Charlize Theron's character in Antarctica. They escape and have no way out. And then a submarine, the submarine from Fast 8, comes out of the ice.
Wow. So a cameo appearance for a physical object.
Not just that. Guess who's driving it?
Gal Gadot.
Yeah. And she comes out and she's like, hey, guys, I'm here. And then the movie ends. And then there's a post-credit scene where The Rock is questioned by Jason Momoa. And he's like, I'm back. I will say,
I don't get it.
I think the next one has potential to be like really fun and like pretty solid ending. I do not want them to do a third one. I think they need to pump the brakes quite literally.
You know, this reminds me of being at lunch in school with my friends when we would talk about South Park. And sometimes I found shooting the shit about South Park with my friends was more fun and humorous than actually watching the show. And like you describing Fast X to me is probably more fun than I would have actually watching the movie.
Yeah, it's a very strange movie. There's one scene where Ludacris and
Tyrese.
What's his name? Tyrese and that group of characters and Han go to a shop in London and Pete Davidson is working there as a like computer hacker guy. And there is no purpose for the scene in the movie at all. It feels like there's like a bunch of things. Tyrese and Ludacris start fighting for no reason. Han eats an edible muffin, like a laced muffin. He gets high, but it doesn't matter. 30 seconds later, he's high for like 10 seconds and it doesn't matter. And then Tyrese throws like pocket sand into the air for no reason. And you think that's going to come back later. Like he's going to,
I think I've heard about this actually.
He's going to like, you know, like be in a tricky situation and throw the sand at somebody. Never comes back. It is the weirdest thing. That it's a very strange movie.
So
I got to stop. We got to stop with these movies.
I know it's probably too hard for you to rank them off the dome, but would you consider it in the top half?
I'd say like right under that half mark.
Okay.
Like,
all right. If there's
10, so like number six.
And then I just kind of want to talk about, and again, spoiler warning, kind of, but this has already been in the world. I want to talk about sort of the memedom and the jokes around Gal Gadot and The Rock coming back to this film.
Yeah.
Is that like, you got to think that them and their massive teams of agents and PR, like they must have known the way that this would play, right? Or if not, then they should all be fired.
For their careers?
I'm just saying, like, are they both at that stage where they have to weather the storm of being like, wow, the old Thanos, you couldn't live with your failures. Yeah. And where did that bring you? Back to me. Like, how, like, I'm just, are they both at that point where they had to eat that because they need the role?
Yeah, like Gal Gadot feels less like she's crawling back because like she didn't have like a big falling out with Vin Diesel like The Rock did, right? Like her character, quote unquote, died and is now coming back. So it's okay. And she, her Wonder Woman movies, like she wasn't out here being, I'm going to change DC. It's less embarrassing for her, more so for The Rock. In my opinion.
At the end of the day, they could still get a movie greenlit. It doesn't matter that movie would probably be crap or whatever. Like,
yeah, but the last one that they made is thought of as one of the worst films of the last 5 years.
I know, but at the end of the day, it's like they can get top billing salaries anywhere they want. They don't have to come back to the Fast and Furious. I understand like the boost that it gives them, but you know, I just don't care. I just don't give a shit because this franchise is absurd, and I don't care.
B, what's the last one that you've seen?
I saw Fast 9. And I thought it was horrible. And I don't think I ever saw Fate of the Furious. I don't know. I think I've seen Furious 7 through the Wiz Khalifa music video. And, you know,
All right. Well, on that note, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we are talking Barry and Succession. All right, folks, season 4 of Barry. We are looking down the barrel of the series finale of the show. Bill Hader has authored the shit out of this. He directed all 8 episodes of the final season. We all watch it. I'm kind of curious in talking about what the show's become and what it was. And I know that this is sort of like Breaking Bad, right? So at the time, it was that they would go around telling everyone that this show is about the study of change. And they had never taken a TV character and started him good and made him bad. That was 15 years ago. TV has changed a lot. So a character changing over the course of a show isn't all that strange. What I do think is strange is the tonal shift of this, not strange, but stark.
Yeah.
Is the tonal shift of this show. We're now getting avant-garde horror scenes that, unless they do it in the series finale, are largely going unexplained, which is a bold choice. So I'm curious, are you enjoying Barry right now in the simplest sense of the term? It's one thing to appreciate and respect something. I know that we all feel that way about this show, but are you enjoying this new, almost milquetoast, Ari Aster, Gonzo horror version of the show versus what it once was, which was a wrap your head around a bull, hey, hitman tries to get his life straight type show?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like the I think the show has always had a level of darkness in it. I mean, like, I think the for first sure. season ends with him killing
that's
that
why
woman
I'm talking more like specifically yeah. about its style, and it's just its sheer tone.
Sure. Yeah.
The where it's not like a horror, right?
Yeah, there are some really truly terrifying moments, like when the cop takes his sunglasses off and his eye is bleeding. That's like, oh my god, that's terrifying. And I've seen Bill Hader kind of talk about what all of that is, not necessarily that moment, but the moment in the episode before where Sally is in her house and there's a man following her around. He's like, that's a manifestation of her guilt and all this kind of stuff. And so, and if you do watch, like, all of that horror stuff is through Sally. There's never really any of that with Bill Hader's character, at least nothing to the level that it is with Sally.
But I think it elevates it when it involves the physical world and tears up her house.
Yes, it is.
Like that is, if they don't explain effective. It, that's like supernatural-esque.
Yes, and I think that's the reason why she left her home with John and was like, because that did not seem like it was in her head necessarily. She left her home because she didn't feel safe for a variety of reasons. And now she's in an equally unsafe situation. It's almost like, you know, she was worried that someone was coming to hurt her or capture her, and now she has made that come true at the end of this most recent episode. So yeah, it's an interesting tone, and it is very different. I do find it still very funny show, like when they shoot the fucking rocket at the mansion and it just zooms right back. Hilarious Looney Tunes stuff.
It still carves out room for jokes.
Yeah.
But in terms of the grander sense of the show, when you go into it now, it's like you take a deep breath, right? That Definitely. Was not the case season
no,
one and two.
Yeah. No, I mean, even just watching Bill Hader or Barry in that chair with the goggles on and just squirming around like really pathetically,
and more so than being terrified, the tone of like the vocal tone of being confused almost makes it scarier, right?
Yes.
It makes sense that Bill Hader said that one of his three upcoming projects that he's debating taking on is a horror movie.
Yeah.
Because you can see he's got a lot of those tendencies. For me, season four is my least favorite of all of them. Less to do with the tonal shifts that you're talking about, more to do because I disagree with the massive time jump. I think it was jarring in a sense that disrupted the actual natural flow of story and character. Having said that, I still think there's still absolutely a lot.
Because you think he should have paid for a sin sooner? What makes you feel that way?
I liked the story at hand and thought it was ramping up finally to the kind of top level eruption of all these lies and schemes and plots. And for them to just essentially sidestep what they had been building toward for 3.5 seasons, it was a little frustrating to me. I'm not as invested with this kind of 8 years later, everyone's kind of gone these different ways, are now rejoining and reuniting under dire circumstances. Like, we just had that. And now we've just kind of elongated that into this next chapter, which I don't love. But still, there's moments of brilliance like that with his ability to stage for both comedy and drama. With NoHo Hank after the missile, driving down the thing, calling Fuchs, screaming, jumping over the cliff. Like, that's brilliant.
I want to make the counterpoint of what else is he supposed to do once Barry goes to jail? Because that means he's either A, in jail, or B, on the run. Like, he kind of boxed himself in with that season three move, if you don't like the way that it's gone.
Yeah, I mean, I understand it's hard to write yourself out of that, but I would have actually preferred a little bit more conflict from Sally and Barry when he shows up in her apartment. Sure. I think Sally, the actress whose name escapes me right now, has been just phenomenal. That actress, she has been one of the best performers on the show. But the character herself is one of the most despicable people on the series.
I think she recently just joined the cast of season 3 of Industry.
Interesting.
Cool. Oh, nice. I don't watch
which I've not watched, but
yeah. So I would have liked a little bit more. You know, seeing her settle for this life and only now realize what a mistake it was, even though it was clear from the jump. You know, I'm just like, okay, now we're just spinning our wheels on a terrible person that I want to see get punished. Okay?
I will say the I understand it's complicated because she leaves this life behind with Barry, goes home, and realizes my life's terrible. It's easy to find comfort in someone, even if you know they're bad for you. Like, just speaking grandly about relationships, you can have comfort with someone you know is bad for you. And for some people, it's just easier to go back to that than be in an uncomfortable situation, be alone with her parents that fucking hate her apparently and are just super shitty people. And you know, it is kind of a very toxic relationship. I don't know if I would even use the word abusive with Barry, because he does love her. He doesn't like hit her.
Well, they do, like, yeah, but they do have that one scene where he verbally abuses the shit out of her at her job.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
he's not totally a self-aware person. He's lying.
I mean, it's kind of like the in a very abstract sense, what Kendall and Logan all try to tell themselves: I'm doing this for my kids. Barry could try to convince himself that he murders all these people to protect his family. The fact is, he does it because he's a fucking murderer. That's the fact of the matter.
He's a sociopath.
I want to say to B's point about the sense of spinning wheels. Larry David joked to Bill Hader that he thought the show should have ended with season 3. There's also been the general narrative out there that Bill Hader has been using this season to practice his sort of directorial skills.
Which, impressive.
Yeah. Do you think that that's why season 4 exists? Because as I've said, he's doing bravura shit, I think. For again, what began, like, the perception of Bill Hader when this show started and where we're at now is night and day.
Yes.
Yeah, but like, I still prefer watching this season of Barry, which is more inconsistent to me than like 85% of what's on TV. So, you know, I think the fourth season's already justified itself. And I'll always like Cousineau really truly being exposed and his hypocrisy and selfishness just being underlined and exclamation pointed to death in this season. I'm like, okay, that is like a natural organic comeuppance for his character arc.
To our point about the sort of drastic tonal shift, have you ever seen a show have such a 180, not 180, but such a stark turn in terms of the way that the show feels? And like, you know, you could say, yes, it has always had this dark core, but what we're seeing this season, as we have just laid out, has taken it to, I think, an entirely new level. And if you were to say, well, what about shows like Breaking Bad? Like, that had a tonal shift. I don't think so. I think that had a character shift. The first episode of that show is about a man being diagnosed with cancer. It was always super fucking dark. If there is a legacy of the show, do you think that that's it?
The only show that I can think of, and it's similar, it's Better Call Saul. And I still don't even think it's
great call
the same, but it is like a guy going slipping Jimmy to Howard Hanlon getting killed in this fucking apartment.
Right. You know? Like,
so I would say that that's the closest I can think of. And as for its legacy, yeah. Whether do you mean as like,
like I'm saying, when you bring up Breaking Bad, it's like, wow, Walter White's fall. When you bring up Thrones, it's about the sprawling world and the CGI. When you bring up these shows, they have a touch piece, a touchstone of what we are going to remember it for. I think Barry might be like the night and day black and white in what it was and what it became at the end.
I think so. I think that's probably it. Because it is impressive that it hasn't like pushed people away, right?
Right. It hasn't been so neck-turning that it like that it breaks your neck, whereas the whiplash is too extreme.
Because it has eased people into it with, you know, flashbacks to Barry's war days and some other things in the present day. And I think season 3 was when I started to feel like this is going in a direction that is really unnerving. Just like, I remember how Barry looked that season with the just his eyes looked like they weren't even in his head. Like
one of my last horrifying. Like banger tweets was like, imagine going back 10 years ago and telling somebody that this is how Bill would turn out. And one was him as Stefan and one was him in jail with like the fucking purple beat up face. If you went back and told somebody like, hey, that guy is going to be doing this shit, nobody would have believed you.
Yeah, just love no, exactly. The age old, you know, cliche, like median's got a dark side.
Yep.
And he uses it effectively.
So how do we all think it ends for Barry? I don't want to go into specific predictions. If you have one, let it rip. But in general, like Hader doesn't strike me as someone prepared to give him a quote unquote happy ending or redemption or even life.
No. He's going to hell and he's bringing a shit ton of people with him.
I think the darkest solution here is one of the three people that Barry loves most dies. So that's either his wife, his kid, or Gene. Because I think that would be the ultimate punishment for him, that despite all this killing, he still failed.
I think he's going to die too, though. I think he's going to hell, that purgatorial kind of beach thing that we've seen, and he's bringing a shit ton of people with him, probably Sarah and Cousineau as well.
I think it's a really good, what you just said, even beyond that. And like, imagine we've seen that weird thing of like, he was passed out or whatever, was like drugged, and it was like walking with all those people. And I don't think they were anyone specific. They were just faceless people. But imagine they get everyone Barry has killed or been responsible for the death of, and he's walking into purgatory or hell or whatever.
With so those people. Paul and a Lost, you're saying?
Honestly, yeah. And I think it works better for, I've never seen the entirety of Lost, but from what I understand, that did not work.
Luckily for you, B is a Lost expert. Yeah, so
Lost purgatory and everything, that wasn't a punishment. It was kind of just like a way.
I know.
Whereas this, it's, you know, much like the old Anakin Skywalker joke. Like if he joins the Force as a ghost, there'd be a shit ton of pissed off Jedi and Padawans that are there to beat the shit out of him in the afterlife.
Yeah.
So I think that this is the ultimate question of where this show now leaves us. And it's something that I've been thinking about all season. Can Bill Hader become the next Jordan Peele?
Yes. Well, he's already demonstrated that he's capable of really just amazing visuals and direction and execution and stuff, and still balance his humor. Cause like Get Out is like a pretty funny movie still. Like I would have voted Obama for a third term or whatever.
Right.
Like,
it's or that third line. Character played by Lil Ray. Yeah. Something. Yeah.
So Boston like, Nope are hilarious.
And right. I think Bill Hader's terrifying. He's always said, I was watching an interview, and I think it was even before he did Barry. He was like, I always wanted to do directing. But right. I auditioned for Saturday Night Live and then that happened.
It might've been Smartless or
that maybe Conan? That might've been what it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think he has the juice to be that kind of next. Do you think Jordan Peele has fallen off that star a little bit?
No, I think what he pulled off with Nope, even though he's making difficult, confounding films on a blockbuster scale. You know how hard that is to be for people to be like, that's abstract as shit. I didn't like it, but guess what? I'm still on board.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know if Bill Hader will do the abstract for his movies. Maybe he'll still
be
pretty simple.
Like he's got the fucking itch, man.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying one way
or
not.
And that's why I think more so, and that's why, because the two names I thought of were Peele, and then to a lesser extent, but related cousin, not so much brothers, but cousins, our boy Slick Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
I.e. sort of leading, broad-shouldered man. Granted, Hader comes from a more of a comedic route, clearly a smart guy, has come up through the business and can write and star and direct in his own projects. But the reason I chose Peele was because of his very distinct stylistic and thematic tics.
I don't know if anyone is Jordan Peele. You know, Jordan Peele is Jordan Peele, but can Bill Hader be a successful, unique, interesting feature film director? Absolutely. He's absolutely shown that off. More times than we can count throughout the history of.
Does he have a Get Out in him?
I think he has special projects in him. Yeah. And I listen, Get Out's a very singular one. I don't know if his first feature directorial film is going to be nominated for Best Picture and win Best Original Screenplay, but I think he's clearly unbelievably creative. He's got a great blend of tone, and he's got a knack for set pieces. So I think we're all going to be in store for a very interesting, fun, rewarding career as audience members from what happens next with Bill Hader.
Yeah, he's been around for a long time, but he's still relatively young at 44. So yeah, I cannot wait to see what he does next. All right, let's swing over to Succession. Alrighty, we are now chatting the final season of Succession because Cade, just like Game of Thrones, does not watch it. It is just Brandon and I on the ones and twos. B, when did you pick the show up? I want to start there. I picked it up before season three started.
So I got the screeners because I was an entertainment reporter at Observer at the time. And I watched like the first episode and a half, you know, month or so before it actually came out. And I was like, meh. And then, you know, about 4, 5, 6, 7 weeks into its first season, everyone on film Twitter is talking about it in terms of like the critics, still not so much mainstream. Everyone's like, you know, it starts a little wobbly and a little standard and then really starts to take off and get better each week. So I was like, okay, I'll go back and check it out. And so I binged the rest of season one, basically. Really, really liked it. Then season two, I watched live and I thought season two was one of the best seasons of television in recent memory.
So I was actually going to ask this at the end, but I'm going to bring this to the top. Is Succession a Pantheon show? And I kind of want to ask this in two ways. Did you feel this way before season four, or has season four led you down that path? So is it in the class of the Breaking Bads, the Mad Men's, the Wire, Sopranos, those touchstone shows? Is it not quite there? I probably think if those are the A tier, this is probably like, if that's the A tier, this is probably the A minus tier, if not more so B plus tier. That's just me. I would love to hear your thoughts.
Like for me personally, I'm not going to put it in my, probably my top five, but I think if you're talking about television as a whole and particularly HBO's catalog, you now have an elite critically acclaimed show that you can very, very, very easily argue has never had a down season. You know, I love The Wire. To me, that's probably the best drama of all time. Well, you know, wow. Season two with the docs.
I've still never seen it.
It's great, man. Like The Sopranos, like Coma Vision's extremely divisive. There's a lot of people who liked them. A lot of people who think they're great.
The Coma one's one of my favorite ones, but that's, okay. Yeah,
you know, but pretty much every show.
Kevin Finnerty, shout out.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much every show that you would have in that Pantheon conversation, pretty much everyone has at least one season where most fans agree, okay, maybe that's a little slight downturn, if not outright bad, like a Game of Thrones with 2.5 or so bad seasons. Succession doesn't really have that. I think that's pretty incredible. So I think if you look at like HBO's library, it's, you know, Game of Thrones, The Sopranos, The Wire, Succession, you know, in some order, I think it's probably on that same tier. Again, I'm not going to put it on my top five, but I think when all is said and done, this is an elite, elite, elite show.
How are you feeling about season four in the context of the show as a whole? Because final seasons are hard, as a fan of Lost and various more shows know, you know.
I think season four is still really working overall. I think Same. Removing Logan in episode three was a masterstroke, but has naturally left a vacuum in terms of, okay, what's not necessarily antagonist, but this unifying gravitational force. Like Mattson has not been able to step into that role.
Because they haven't let him.
Yeah, that's all true. So I think maybe some momentum is left out, but I still love that decision and still think they've handled the wake of that, no pun intended, to his death, really, really well, because it's then doubled down on how business is just a mirror for their relationships and the damage that's been wrought on them over their lives and what that's resulted in as humans in the present.
Yeah, I'm on the same page. I actually think season four, it's hard for me because now Succession is Succession, right? Whereas, and we talk about the confirmation bias of pop culture, right? Succession is now Succession. So you go into season four, it's like, this is the best show of all time. How do you remove yourself from those hopes? But I actually think what has given this show such a momentum kick in the ass towards the end here is its structure, and that it's playing out a day in the life. Yeah, so it's taken this grand series about the machinations of American capitalism and blah, 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 and zoned it the fuck in on, here's the week and a half in the life of America's most influential and combustible.
It's a great point.
Family. I think as a result, you could point to each episode and be like, the Logan death, the wake, the funeral, the election. And when you could shorthand episode names for an entire season, that to me is the definition of iconic. Friends did it as a whole bit, right? The one with the blah. When you're able to naturally generate that, I mean,
it was smart to revolve season four around, okay, here are four central events that are going to be catalysts for major character shakeups and not so much development, but perhaps securing their fates to a degree.
So on that note, what has been your favorite episode of the season so far? I know there's going to be a lot of shouts for the one that Logan died. I know there's going to be a lot of shouts for the funeral. I'm sure once the finale airs, that will be one too. I think underratedly, the one after Logan dies, The Wake, which again, does that Game of Thrones thing where all the characters were spread out and then they sucked them back in and brought them into one room. The Wake, they're all trading barbs. And then the funeral is the same thing in both a lesser extent in terms of less characters are given the spotlight, but a greater extent to they're given deeper and more things to say. So that's why I am leaning towards the funeral, because it also has my favorite moment of the season so far, which we will touch on in a bit. So what was your favorite episode so far this season?
I think I got to go with two answers. One's the basic one, Logan's death, because as it's been, you know, covered to death in the media, it is essentially a play that plays out via television. It was, even though they had hinted it and laid the breadcrumbs, it still was very surprising to see them get rid of Logan this early. The whole time too, no matter how convincing it is, you're still thinking like, is Logan dead? Like, is he going to pop back up? Like, what's happening? I think the way that they let the shock and pre-grief kind of settle in waves across the characters is really well done. And then my other answer is probably the election episode, because at its heart, Succession is not a drama. It is a comedy. And Tom convincing Greg to do more cocaine with him by calling him racist is just comedic genius. Jesse Armstrong in that writer's room, you know, them, Deadwood, and Veep have a Shakespearean command of vulgarity that is unmatched in literature and pop culture in the last like 30 years. It's unbelievable.
If we're going to call out specific lines, I just want to call out the Skarsgård line this week of comparing America's democracy to Botswana's. Just an unbelievable fucking dagger. He's like, yeah, you guys have been a democracy for 50 years, so you're almost as old as Botswana's, which is just fucking decapitating.
I also gotta say, Skarsgård's a guy who I've never thought was a very good actor. I always thought he got roles like way above his pay grade.
Former guest on this show, man. Have you seen The Northman, bro?
I still haven't seen The Northman, but I would say he's giving my favorite performance of his entire career as Mattson. That guy is so skin-crawlingly fucking weird and eccentric. It's brilliant.
If you watch that film and now with the context of this role, you'll be like, oh, this guy's got it. He absolutely has got it.
Yeah, yeah. I got to go back to it. Something.
Oh, I told him he turned into a fucking animal in that film. Like, I have lost my nerves for these things a long time ago, but how purely ferocious and intimidating he was, I was legit scared to talk to him. Yeah, straight up, you know, I've spoken to The Rock, Matt Damon, whoever. This, I was like, dude, this guy scared the shit out of me. All right, so I want to talk about the most surprising, shocking moment of the season so far, not counting Logan dying off screen, which I think is the perfect litmus test for whether or not you understand good TV and sort of what Logan dying off screen facilitated for the anxiety that you felt when you watched that. Like, if you felt, oh, I would like to see him have a heart attack on screen, you missed the point of the whole thing.
Just quickly, Film Crit Hulk, you ever read him?
I've heard of him, yeah.
Yeah, he's a, you know, really, really smart guy. He once told me that a good writer, like commentator, helps viewers understand why they're feeling the way they're feeling. And I think you just kind of, you did that very well just now. You just nailed that.
Yeah, because what you want, thanks, B. Because what that is you want answers. You want to know, is he really dead? Am I being tricked? So the anxiety all played into that. So I understand that that's probably the most quote unquote shocking, surprising. And then I also understand that what I'm about to say is probably the next most quote unquote normie response. But for me, it's them tipping the election to the extent that they did, because other than like characters dying and who's going to win. That's effectively the dramatic plotting crescendo of the series, right? Like, that's what this all has been building to, right? The Roy family influencing American democracy as we know it. And I'm not sure I ever saw it coming in this form. I know that they had been teasing the fact that there is a election in the background via Connor's participation in it, but I really never saw virtually Roman and Kendall having the final say.
I mean, you know, Logan's death is obviously the easy one. I'm trying to think. I mean, it's not necessarily, I don't think that Succession does necessarily shock on purpose. I think it's always a natural, very organic conclusion. So
also to that point, another one that I have is when Shiv tells Tom that she's pregnant and he's like, is this a move? So I get your point.
Yeah, exactly. So my two that just came to mind is like Shiv being pregnant. That's not shocking given everything that the groundwork that they laid, her complicated conversations with her mother and her relationships there. But it is a somewhat depressing note because she's not really capable of change. Or then we have Roman, who since being CEO has become the absolute worst. He was that, and that's the most predictable progression for him. But also over the last season and a half, you saw moments where you thought, okay, Roman's slightly making progress towards being a modicum of a better person. But now it's all, you know, completely fallen back. And then you have Kendall, who has had multiple opportunities to escape this family, escape this life, and who the showrunners have essentially, or who Adam McKay, who executive produces, has essentially said, the whole show is really about Kendall's soul. His soul's in the balance. But every time he's at the
I did not know that. I mean, that's obviously clear, but for the creator to explicitly state it in that sense shows you where his heart and mind is at.
Yeah. Well, Adam McKay and Jesse Armstrong is the creator, but obviously they're working, you know, pretty long. Kendall's the one who's always shown the most aptitude for humanity. You know, he's had the most sympathy of all. And every time he's at the precipice of a positive change, he throws it all away. And we see that almost every single episode this season. So again, none of it is shocking, but they are all potent, you know, thoughtful, considerate moments that really align with the characters that have been sketched out here.
All right. So we're going from the most shocking moment of the season to your favorite. For me, it is Ewan's eulogy of his brother. I tweeted this before the season started. The one thing I needed was another Ewan. And I also tweeted Marsha face off with Logan, because I felt that those were the only two characters that really never backed down to him and could really check him and could really rock his knees and make him sway. And while we didn't quite get a face-off between the two, I think a fucking eulogy in which, A, he delivers a beautiful sort of summation of Logan's past, also shits on him, and also literally physically fights off the family to give said speech, counts as sort of a face-off. So, and the reason that this was so great to me is, A, James Cromwell is a veteran of veterans, man. This guy has been around for 50 years, and he has been fantastic every time he's popped up on screen.
But for all 50 of those years, he's been like 75.
Exactly. It's the same thing with Ed Harris, who's only in like his early 70s or something, and from Jersey, not from Texas. The most Texan guy you'd ever see.
I mean, it's the same thing with Kevin Costner and Jeff Bridges, like from LA, but have become the go-to Southern.
Well, but LA, if you drive a bit south, you know, there's some desert land down there, but
it's LA.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't tell me this Montana guy rancher is, you know,
I know. The reason that that speech is so powerful is because nothing changed, right? He had been doing that his entire life, speaking truth to Logan's insidious power. And he wasn't prepared to let Logan's death stop him from doing that. And it wasn't acidic and vengeful, but it was genuinely mournful and regretful of both his brother's literal passing, but also what his life was. So for me, and the series finale would have to do something grand to top that, because to me, I think that that was the perfect sort of mixture of acting talent, what Succession succeeds at, writing, but also it doesn't have the crutch of it being the main character, right? Of course, Kendall's speech was a showstopper. There's no doubt. But the fact that they could bring this guy out of the fucking boondocks and have him deliver this powerhouse speech, I mean, that is what the show is to me.
it's a relief pitcher coming on in the eighth and striking out the side, you know? It was great. I don't think this is my favorite moment necessarily, but one that I think encapsulates all the damage and deep-seated insecurities and all the consequences of being raised in transactional relationships. It's when all three siblings are together and Roman, as uncomfortable as I've ever seen a human being, just goes, should we do the huggy thing? And then does the most awkward, like triple, you know, three people side hug I've ever seen in my life. And again, it's not like this big explosive moment, but it says everything about these characters.
All right. With one episode to go, who do you find yourself, quote unquote, rooting for or against? Me, for, I am rooting for Kendall just because I'm a sucker for the quote unquote complicated man anti-hero. I always find that I root for them. I'm not going to stop now. B for me is Mattson because I just love Skarsgård as a performer. In terms of rooting against, Roman, because frankly, I've always hated the character. And I actually think that Culkin's performance, given the fucking praise it gets, is a bit overrated in the macro sense, because he's clearly using a lot of his regular personality in Roman. And then Mencken, because he seems like the succession version of Mephisto.
I'm definitely rooting for the American people within the Succession universe because they are getting screwed every which way. And I'm rooting against all of the siblings because they're horrible. And this show, I think, is purposefully designed an ensemble cast in which you hate everybody very intentionally. None of them are redeemable to me. I'm also rooting for some of that Roy family billionaire found, you know, funds to make its way into Brandon Katz's bank account somehow.
Trickle down. Predictions for the finale. You don't have to drill down too deep. I always thought that the most amusing take out there that Greg would somehow rise to be named CEO. But now I actually think it's coming into play because Mattson told Shiv that Mencken is down for an American CEO because things never work out for the Roy trio. And because Shiv's general haphazardness in the way she wheels and deals, you get the feeling that Lucas wants to cut her loose first chance he gets. He also has grown to like Greg, as evidenced by him saying to him, in like the typical bully who used to pick on kid who now likes said kid, hey, sexy. Like, there are actual avenues in which Greg ascends to not quite winning, because I don't think anyone is going to quote unquote win, but in terms of
if
ending
Greg is a CEO, that's a win. That's a bold-faced victory.
So I don't think that's, I'm not predicting that, but that is what I think would be like a truly hilarious outcome. And because he didn't do it through fan service, he actually figured out a way to make it make sense.
I would love that. And I think it makes a ton of sense. I think one of two things is going to happen in the end. Number one, the Gojo deal goes through, the kids lose Waystar, and despite having tens of billions of dollars, they are no longer connected to their father. They're no longer connected to their legacy. They are no longer in charge of anything. And despite the fact that they have all this money to invest and create anything new, they aren't capable of creating anything new. And unfettered from what their father built, they have absolutely no identity and no ability to be happy. So that's number one. And both of these kind of have a thematic through line. Number two is that Kendall does figure out a way to stop the deal, push out both Shiv and Roy, and is the CEO of Waystar. But in stopping the deal, has essentially sentenced Waystar to a long, slow death because it can't, you know, compete in this kind of modern world. And so he will be, you know, the captain of a sinking ship, and again find himself empty and without any real purpose or meaning as a result. And in both of these scenarios, it's like the most explosive, non-explosive thing.
Right.
Nothing crazy.
And that is happened. The show, right? That is the show.
No one's really dying. It's really going the course of which it's already been set. And yet it's so absolutely in line with the trajectories these characters have always been on.
And then finally, I want to tie a bow here. I put this out in a tweet. Are either Kendall or Logan Roy in the conversation with the GOAT TV characters of all time, which I think is a separate conversation from whether or not the show is?
I think like Logan's one of the greatest characters of all time. I don't know. I don't think either of them are like number one. But I think
that they're in the conversation.
I think they're in the conversation. If you were saying I'm going to rank like the 50 best, you know, characters, like I would put Logan in probably, you know, off the top of my head, because I don't have a list in front of me. I could see absolutely Logan being on like Rolling Stone's top 20, you know, or something like that.
Yeah, for absolutely. Sure. I just don't know if either. I think if they were combined into one, right, it'd be a no-brainer. But because they've sort of been split into two personalities, I don't think it's quite there.
Kendall's
all right.
Patheticness doesn't get him over the finish line.
Yeah. All right, that's going to do it for this week's show. Thank you all for tuning in. Make sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or a rating on Spotify. Make sure to follow my buddy Brandon at @great_Catsby and Cade at @Cade_Onder, myself at @Eric_Ital, and the podcast at @PostCredPod. Also, follow us on TikTok. I'm trying to push that a bit more. That is also at @PostCredPod. We will see y'all in the next few weeks. June is full of films. We've got The Flash. And we've got Extraction 2 in the next few weeks specifically. I have an interview with director Sam Hargrave coming out, so keep your eyes peeled for that. All right, y'all. Peace.
My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius.